about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who is the Most High? Who is the divine authority? It's all about the claim to the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody. We're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge. So ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Universal Hive Mind. Today is August 2nd, 2025. I'm your host, Nate Kapp, and welcome to the 78th Cubbyhole Podcast, where critical topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. The website for this show is cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyHole.com. And if you prefer to listen to the show on a different platform, you can also listen with Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, TuneIn Radio, Pandora, Simplecast, YouTube, Odyssey, X, Minds, BitChute, and much more. If this is your first time listening to the show, welcome to the Cubbyhole. And as I will continue to let all the first-timers know, I definitely recommend starting at podcast number one, work your way forward in order, so that way you'll have a bigger picture, better understanding of the overarching message that is delivered in this whole Cubbyhole podcast, all right? And as for all the listeners, all the studiers who have returned to listen to this show, I really appreciate all your time and all your effort. And I really hope that you have accumulated a lot of light, a lot of beautiful light, a lot of valuable light so far. We have a lot of light to share today, so it's going to be a pretty big show. We're first going to start off with a quick recap of show number 77. And when I say quick, I really mean that. I know there's times when I say that and then I take forever. But sometimes I really have to explain things and really go in depth just to refine the message. So that being said, I'm going to jump from the recap into the ritual that I've been doing pretty much for the last 10 to 15 shows, dealing with this sacred bridge and also the third degree as a means of reconnecting us to this ancient sacred mythos, the unfoldment of the ancient Egyptian mythos. And it is a very beautiful science, and I really hope people who are listening have come to an understanding of just how important this really is. And I hope that it has compelled you to go a lot further into your own research to really see it for yourself, even though a lot of that information is very difficult to find. It's out there. And I've tried to give as much reference for everything that I have broke down as possible. Obviously, there's a lot more reference that I could share, but it's very difficult doing a show, let alone trying to make sure that I put every single piece of reference that I have up there. But I always try to do my best to make sure that I share that with you guys. And so today I'm just going to quickly jump into the recap of show number 77, and then we will go right into the ritual that I've been doing regarding the sacred bridge and the third degree of esoteric Freemasonry. And this is dealing with trying to expedite and really put into people's minds the understanding, the importance of the ancient Egyptian mythos. And so I'm really hoping that it is helping people, and I really will do my best to continue to refine this type of information with as much accuracy and as much responsibility as possible. And then from that point, I will jump into the content for today. We're going to cover the breakdown, the etymology of two words side by side, that being retrace and religion. And religion is one of those words that is very ambiguous in the way that people understand it. And I believe that this is what this word really represents. It's a word of confusion for a reason. And that is to understand that it is a snare in our journey as human beings, because when you understand that the word means to bind or to tie back or to thwart from forward progress in evolution or consciousness, when you understand it this way, and that means that this word is a snare. And a lot of people just never bother looking into the word religion and really don't understand this word all the way around. It's a symbol. It should be exhausted in the derivations, in the etymology, because these etymologies are not just, you know, made up and silly nonsense. They actually help us, even though some of the etymologies don't really add up together when you first look at them. When you really go deeper into the word, especially when you compare it to the word retrace, it really puts things into perspective, because it's all about being conscious of the words that we're using, you see? And so I'm going to get into that. And then from there, I'm going to get into the symbol known as left foot first, or some other researchers also refer to it as left foot forward. And this is a very, very powerful symbol when you really deeply understand it, because it is a language that we can trace ourselves back to in order to really understand this eschatology that I've been developing in these later shows. And so I'm really looking forward to getting into that. And then from there, we're going to get into the sacred trace techniques, which are techniques that are really all tied together within the modalities that, or you could say they're extensions of the modalities that I've been sharing regarding the sacred trace, which is emulation, synchronization, ritual, and mimicking. And so these techniques are very useful, very valuable, and very helpful. And so I really hope people will take the time to really listen. I'm not going to go so deep into these techniques, but just to give people the idea of just how valuable it is to put yourself into action in order to learn something. Especially these, you know, very ancient arcane ideas. And so, that being said, there are slides for today's show. So if you're not already at cubbyhole.com, please go there and then go to the top where it says podcast 51-100. Click on that and then go all the way down to the bottom where it says show number 78. And there you will find all the slides for today's show. Okay. So just a really quick recap of show number 77. One of the first things that I talked about was the cultivation of care. And so this is such a big deal. This is something that just has to be repeated over and over and over, because that's what it actually represents. Something that is repeated over and over and over is something that will stick. That's what a ritual is all about. And so we as a species have the ability to try to understand what we are part of in this world. And the biggest thing that anybody could really truly understand about themselves or about the mind or about the brain or about the self is that it is a condition. We are living truly as a species who can be conditioned, which we are. We are a species of condition, and therefore we have the ability to be conditioned even if we're not aware of the conditioning. And therefore we're living in a world of the condition known as apathy, largely. So this means that we are living in a condition of no care. So if we can help each other by caring enough to, well, first we have to help ourselves. We have to help ourselves and then be able to help others. But there are people who are doing everything that they can to help people understand this condition of apathy and how to get out of it. And what I'm trying to help people understand is the way out of not caring is to start to care enough of understanding the condition of apathy and therefore cultivating, putting yourself through a ritual every day to cultivate care in order to pull yourself out of the condition of apathy, which is a condition that has been put into the people of this world for a very, very long time. And that is something that is very unacceptable as a species. We can't live in a world and not care about what's going on in the world or what's going on within us. We have to care enough. And therefore, we have to put ourselves in the ritual of care. And see, this is something that is so difficult for people to understand because they think that their condition is just natural. And they think that it's really not a condition. It's just, that's just the way they are. And that is where people are just suffering in a deep, deep form of mind control. So we have to become aware. You know, we have to care enough to become aware and then care enough to cultivate care. And so that's what we got into. Because I am sharing the sacred trace dealing with the modality of ritual, to trace the ritual of care out, which is the generative principle, to generate care. And so in order to do this, there are those who do care and we can mimic them, not, you know, copy them, not become them, but mimic them in order to allow the self to synchronize with those who do care, to emulate them by imitating the way that they care in order to learn what that really means, because it's about experiencing that care. It's about experiencing what that really represents at a very deep spiritual level. And so we got into the cone, the spire, the conspire. We got into the Holy Trinity, creation, the profane trace, and the sacred trace, fetishism. That's something that this whole series is really all leading up to, and I'm really looking forward to developing this a lot further with the Netcher Thoth. So definitely stay tuned for that. And then we also got into emulation, synchronizing, the crescent arch, sign language, pure forms, mythology, eschatology, hero cults, cosmic parents, totemic sociology, animism, rejuvenation, mental material death, spiritual birth, spirit, square, X, zodiac, the inner journey of the soul, darkness, soil, underworld, amenta, the duat, the tomb, the womb, death, metamorphosis, natural law, religion, mystery, traditions, mystery, schools, the little bear, the great year cycle, the stellar, lunar, and solar mythos, Osiris, Horus, esoteric Freemasonry, anthropomorphism, preserving, Athenism, and so much more. And so, again, just to reiterate, I go through this whole recap just to get us up to speed, just to say words over and over, these topics over and over, just to really keep all these shows cohesive, okay? Because they all go together. And so that way, it just helps us remember. And that's what this is all about, because these words are invoking the spirit. So, that being said, we're going to jump into the ritual. So, please, if you're not already looking at the first slide for today's show, check out the zodiac, the first slide, because this image is very important to look at when going through this ritual. And it's to keep the mind oriented. Okay, so most of what we are dealing with in this zodiac is I've been going mostly through from the west to the south to the east. So through Libra, Scorpio, Sagittarius, Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces. We've mostly just when it comes to the eschatology, that's really dealing with the west down to the south. Okay. And then a little bit beyond that. And of course, it all goes together, but it's about the spiral to refine all this information. It just, the waves keep coming of information where you can just keep refining it. And so that's what I want people to hold in their mind as we go through this. So we are currently still drawing clarity through the art of tracing this tracing board. And we are symbolically drawing from the chest of the third degree tracing board of ancient and modern esoteric craft masonry, which is analogous to the bottom half of this zodiac, okay? The dark half, if you will. But really, it's dealing with the whole zodiac. So we are in the process of remembering pure forms because we're living in a world of fragmentation. And we're trying to reunite the soul with the spirit of the true care in order to cultivate that care and rebuild and polish and strengthen the modern pillar of today, which you could call the solar pillar of the third degree, being part of this colossal sacred bridge that is barely connected to the ancient sacred pillar of the past, which is, you could say, the stellar pillar. And so what's missing between the two is the lunar crescent arch, the archway, symbolically. And so this is why Thoth is so potent in this part of the ritual, because something is missing. Something is not there. Something's missing within us. And I'm telling you that Thoth, the Netcher, who is the lunar god, the moon god, is where we're going to find this missing part. Okay? So if anyone's paying attention, I'm sure they kind of know where I'm going with this if you really have paid attention to the whole ritual of Osiris. So it's all about fetishism. And once we really learn this whole ritual the best we can, we're going to really start to see how important this archway really is that I'm talking about. And one of the biggest reasons that this archway is really nowhere to be found. Why you don't hear anybody talking about this is because people have grown very negligent over thousands of years. People have, especially the priest classes of the past, because they're the ones who were carrying this knowledge. They're the ones who were bearing this knowledge. And therefore, they got clumsy with the information, and people started to take it very literal and turn it into something that it's not. But for this reason, the dark psychologists of this world, the dark sorcerers, the ones who really understand a lot of this information and really understand the condition of the masses, they are thriving on the fact that most people are so detached from their roots in this way, from their ancient ancestors, basically their cosmic parents. They're very detached, spiritually especially. And these dark beings, these dark-hearted, dark-minded beings, these people of this great control system of the world. And when I say great, wrap that in quotes. But it is just a huge control, a mental control system backed by duress, you know, coercion. These people, they understand the trace, and therefore they also trace. And they draw their power from the ignorance and negligence of the people. They draw their power from the lost connection that the people have from the knowledge of especially the ancient Egyptian mythos. And this evil behavior that these dark ones have at the top is something that can be knowable. It's something that is observable, because it's something you can see just through the human condition alone. Because, again, it's about understanding the condition of apathy. And therefore, the condition of apathy is what they're thriving on. And this evil behavior that they have is taking advantage of people who are in this condition. And it's also, this evil behavior is also about understanding the word religion in its truest form, but more importantly, religion itself as a mechanism, as ignorance of not allowing the self to go further in consciousness, because there's a belief system. And that can be within any institutionalized religion. It can be in atheism. It can be in the religion of money, you know, the belief in money as the highest power, or the belief in authority, scientism. You know, all these different types of religion, they're really all the same when you really understand that anything that's holding us back from our forward evolution in consciousness, this is what these dark, evil beings are thriving on. And therefore, they have built a whole control structure in the mind, a compartmentalized knowledge differential in the minds of the whole world. And because they have this knowledge differential over everyone, they can just completely annihilate people all day long. And as long as they, especially when they have a threat of violence to protect these people, these dark elitists. But the reason that this structure really is in place, and why there is this evil behavior that is running people's minds and, you know, people are not aware of it is because people have forgotten objective morality. They don't understand natural law any longer, and they really haven't for quite a long time. For thousands and thousands of years, people have forgotten this law. And that is why they can't discern the difference between right and wrong. They can't discern between evil and good. So they're very confused. Most people are very, very confused because they remain ignorant willfully. And the other reason for this type of behavior that's going on in the world is because we as a species do not understand why the Great Pyramids were built. And I can confidently say most people don't understand why the Great Pyramids were built, because it is a contingency to warn people that we're going to slide into materialism and socialism if we go too far in the north and venerate in the day sky east to west and west to east, which is this whole solar cult that we're all part of. And that doesn't mean that it's the whole picture of why the pyramids were built. There's many reasons that the pyramids were built, but ultimately it is a language, a geometric language that is speaking directly to every single human being on this planet, especially if you understand the mythos, the ancient Egyptian mythos. And therefore, that's another reason why evil is running this world. It's because people don't understand the evolution of the mythos, therefore they don't understand the evolution of the human story. People don't understand that the human story cannot truly be understood without understanding this evolution of the mythos. And therefore, that being said, symbolism is another reason that evil is existing in this world, is because the people who understand the symbolism, who run the minds of this world, they understand how symbolism works on the subconscious, and therefore it is a form of mind control. Okay, this is something that Brandon did a very beautiful job explaining in the 30s and into the 40s of methods of mind control, which is the subversive use of sacred symbolism. And so this is what we really have to understand as a universal language that can really help us understand the playbook that's being used against us. Because when we really take the time to trace out the playbook of nature, of the dark occult, who take the mystery schools, the science of the mystery schools, and they use it for their own advantage, their own selfish gain in this world. They care enough to learn this information. That's why it's considered dark care, because they care enough to learn this playbook, and this playbook is not theirs. They don't own it. It is a playbook that they have discovered, and they have twisted everything in the playbook to work out into their favor. And so what we're trying to do is trace this playbook out in order to generate a shield of defense against their methods. It's that simple, but it's not that simple to learn that type of information, but that's what we're doing in these shows. We are laying out this information in hopes that it inspires you to go a lot further into understanding where your power, where your sovereignty really is. because your sovereignty is waiting to be discovered by understanding the methods, by understanding the sciences, by understanding the cycles, so you can understand these cycle paths of the world. So that being said, what has to be widely overcome in this world by the masses is neglect, laziness, apathy, cowardice, and ignorance, which has almost completely destroyed this connecting archway back to the ancient sacred pillar of the past. You know, we have to understand, people have just abandoned the sacred. And the first thing that we should think of when it comes to abandonment is realizing that we mustn't victimize ourselves to this condition, because abandonment is a condition. This condition, this word, it's really a symbol when you really think about it, because abandonment is really the point of responsibility. Because abandonment, if we abandon something, that means that we have let go of responsibility. And so in order to not abandon something, we have to be responsible. And therefore, this word, abandonment, we should study this word, exhaust this symbol, to where you really understand abandonment inside and out. Because if we abandon this word, then we lose our responsibility and therefore we slide into socialism as a result. So we cannot abandon the information any longer. We cannot abandon this symbol and what abandonment really stands for when it comes to being an adolescent collectively who has lost their way home, who has not grown up yet, who has abandoned the parents, the true parents of this universe. And so we are all alone and we don't have any way back home unless we actually do the work and care enough to do the work and leave no stone left unturned. So that way we find our responsibility. We become responsible because it's about ritualizing responsibility back into our lives. That's what the cultivation of care really is all about. And so what this whole Cubbyhole podcast is really all about is restoring this sacred, abandoned bridge back to its correct functional form, which is with as much accuracy and responsibility as possible, because it's about understanding that the better and sturdier the connection is to the source, the more clarity and understanding of our true sovereignty, which will in turn help us get out of this condition of ignorance and ultimately slavery. And we're doing this as a correspondence within our minds and within our hearts. And then we're willing it into manifestation. So it's a high level. It's a very deep level of responsibility. We have to care enough. We have to care enough to learn the condition of apathy. And then we have to ritualize ourselves out of apathy by ritualizing, by cultivating care back into our hearts. And spending time and paying attention to the things that truly matter. That's where care really is. by spending time on things that truly matter more than the material possessions, more than the material life that most of us have been raised in. So we have to pay attention, you know, use our spiritual currencies to build wealth within. And this means taking lots of notes, organize the notes, the information, and then once we have enough information, contemplate on that information, come to a deep understanding of that information. And then once we have a good enough understanding, then we must share the information. We must express the information. And when we express the information, that is where we start to really grow, because putting the information to use into rhetoric, this is where we start to learn. This is where we start to really deeply learn, and the information solidifies where we speak with confidence and speak with a true vitriol, because it's a refinement process towards evolution and also freedom from man's law, from man's, you know, mommy and daddy law. So it's our divine conscious connection with nature and sovereignty. It's about our direct lineage back to the ancient adepts of the past, who were the raised elders, the learned men and women who made major sacrifices to preserve this beautiful light in stone, and also in the cosmos, and in the mythos, and also in other sacred traditions. They traced pure forms and passed them on to future generations as an absolute transmission of agape love, the highest form of love. And so, in order to discover these preserved sciences, we are symbolically journeying through the soul receiver of Amenta as a fellow traveler through the trials of the Duat, or the underworld, as a means of bridging the gap of this sacred bridge through the hidden realm, through the occult, and using the maps of the mystery schools that are derived from the mist, or the runes, or the ruins, because it's about discovering and using the craft, the method, and passing through the Duat, the Book of the Dead. This is where our behavior is measured intelligently, and what we know is measured symbolically, like the degrees of the lunar light, all the phases of the lunar light. So this is the principle of Thoth, or the more ancient Jehudi or Tot. And we are symbolically sowing knowledge in the black soil of Chem, or the southern half of the earth, in the sacred garden, and hopefully reaping more truth and more wisdom as a result. And we are filling the grail by demystifying the occult. So I really hope people appreciate this ritual that I always do, or that I have been doing lately. And I really hope that it is helping this information solidify and make sense, a lot more sense. That's the reason I do it. And I do add in information, you know, different details, just to, you know, give it more flavor, but also to make sure that we understand there's always more knowledge that you can bring to the information. And it's a refinement tool. That's what ritual is all about. It's a refinement tool. That's what the spire ritual is all about. The spiritual. That's what being spiritual is all about. It's a refinement. And so, that being said, we're going to get into the words Retrace and Religion. So if you will please go to the next slide. And this is really, really important to see these two words side by side and do a comparative study of these two words, and even further than what I'm going to explain. Because we have to understand that the word retrace, when put together with religion, this helps us understand an aspect of this word that can really help us understand the bigger range of what this symbol of religion really represents. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through the word retrace and the etymology and the definitions, and I'm going to talk about a few things about the retrace. And just to, you know, give people a more eclectic idea of what this represents, and then I'm going to get into religion, and then I'm going to show you the side-by-side study and how they relate. And it's going to give us a lot more clarity of this word religion. So the word retrace comes from the Latin prefix re, which means again or back. And then the word trace comes from the French root traceur, which means to draw or to follow a path. Okay, so there are three definitions here, derivations. So retrace means to trace back to a source or to go back over or to go over or along again, often in a reverse direction. And then, of course, the working definition states the act of going back to the origin or truth. And so anybody who puts that together in their mind can see how this relates in the spiritual use. But I just want to go over a few ways that can help us understand this word a little further. So if you're using the word retrace in an artistic or technical way, this is about, I talked about this before with just the tracing aspect. When you're drawing an image, by tracing an image, you are drawing an image. So by putting a piece of paper over an image and then you're tracing that image, what you're doing is drawing that image out. You're pulling it out. You're pulling the image out onto a new piece of paper. Okay, and that's very symbolic, but also it's just very literal as well. And so to retrace is to go back over the original lines of that drawing to make it sharper, to make it more clear. You see? So that means that once you've traced the image out and you want to sharpen that image, if you want the image to be a lot clearer, you retrace it. You just go back over the drawing again. You just go back over the drawing again, right? Very simple. And then another way that retrace is very important to understand is if you think about starting your journey through the woods, to take a hike through the woods. And while you're going through the woods, in order to not lose your way, especially if there's no path, is to always pay attention to the markers, things that are unique on your way. So paying attention to a certain type of rock or a certain type of tree or a certain type of flower or, you know, just something that catches your attention as you're going through, just to make sure that you can find your way back, to retrace your footsteps back the way you came. That's another form of retrace. And then, you know, think of the symbol of the circled dot. Okay. And, you know, the circled dot also applies to what I just said with going into the woods, because you can look at that as an allegory as well. But just think of the fact that we all come out into the world. We come outward into the world. And as we develop and become adults, we realize that we must go in the world as well. Okay, so it's the spiritual, the sacred journey. And so the way that you can look at this with the circle dot is starting at the point and going outward to the circle, and then from the circle going back inward, okay, going back to the point. And that also is very interesting when you think of being in a conversation and telling a story. You always have a starting point in the story, a beginning, which is the point. And then from the beginning, you work your way out, take people's minds on a journey, spiraling out to the circle. And then once you reach that midpoint, then you work your way back to make your point. So that way it has a beginning and a middle and an end, in a sense, in people's minds. And when you think of the mental intellectual sense of the word retrace, it's about going back into your memories, which is, you could say, retrospect. To retrospect is to go back and visit certain thoughts or memories in the past, something you went through, something you experienced, and you're retracing your memory footsteps, if you will. So that is very important information when understanding this word retrace. Now, when we put this word side by side with the word religion, this is very interesting, because the word religion, a lot of people understand this who have been listening to this show. We have definitely laid out the etymology of religion, in the sense that this word comes from the Latin religare, which comes from the prefix re, which means back or again, just like retrace. And then the Latin root verb ligare means to bind, to tie, to fasten, or to thwart. So religion means to bind, to tie back, in that sense. Okay? And so this is very important to understand when we are trying to recognize what is being tied back, what is bound, what are we bound to when we are part of religion. Well, we're all part of the religion of natural law. Natural law is a religion in the sense that we are all bound to this law. We cannot break this law. We cannot avoid this law. We are bound to it. We are binded to this law. It is something that we cannot escape. And so, something else that we can't escape is truth. We can try to escape truth, but truth is the ultimate religion, because truth is central. Truth is the binding principle of the universe. And therefore, we are bound to this. But it doesn't mean that we see it all the way. It doesn't mean that we are going to look at it or to seek it, because we can see, we've all been there. We've all gone through resisting truth at some point. We've all experienced the power of the magnetism of truth, where it's pulling you in, but you just don't want it. And you just refuse it. But it's always pulling at you. It's always drawing you in. And most people of this world just seem to be very strong in their will to remain ignorant, which means resistance to truth. And so the other part of religion that we definitely are aware of is, or anybody that's been listening, is the fact that religion, in the sense of holding people back in consciousness or in evolution, is what I talked about earlier with, you know, these major religions like Christianity, the institutionalized Christianity, not the teachings of any of these religions, but the institutions, the belief system that people allow themselves to be part of. Judaism, Islam, Jainism, Hinduism, Buddhism, you know, the list goes on. Atheism is also a religion. Satanism is also a religion, which most people are partaking in Satanism and they don't even realize it, including the people who say they are a part of these major religions in the world, because they just don't understand the adversary. They don't understand that the adversary is ignorance, willful ignorance. And so, you know, there's also scientism, or the belief in money, or the belief in authority. These are all boiled down to religion in the sense of holding people back from developing spiritually in consciousness. And so that in and of itself is very important to understanding this word. But the word that a lot of people avoid, the etymology that a lot of people avoid, and I'm not even getting into all the etymologies of religion, but it's important to do that, to be eclectic. I've gone through these different etymologies. But the one that I really think a lot of people need to understand a lot further is the word religare. So religare means, it comes from the Latin prefix re, which means back or again, the same as the others. And the word lego, the Latin verb lego, means to read, to gather. So the definition is to go over again, to reread. So think about that with the retrace. So retrace means to trace back to a source. So religion, religare, to go over again. That means to trace back, right? To reread. Retrace, to go back over. Religion, religare, to go over again. Retrace, to go over or along again, often in a reverse direction. Religion, religare, to go over again, to reread. It's saying the same thing. Because the thing is that to go over again, to retrace back over again, to reread, is a ritual. It's to refine the self. It is to take the sacred information, the sacred knowledge, and apply it over and over and over. Now, the danger of that is if you don't understand logic, then rereading and trying to get something to stick, going over again the sacred, just becomes a way of regurgitation and just saying what has been read out loud, but with no real deep understanding, no logical deducing, no logical questioning, no true deep understanding at all. There's no comparative study in the information, and therefore it becomes just a regurgitation, to where if you are going over again the information in a ritual in order to understand the sacred, it is very useful. And that really, truly is religion, because you are making your understanding of the world, you're caring enough to understand the world and yourself. And therefore, that in and of itself is what religion is, because it's binding you back to truth. So religere is also very important to understand, and it's also important to understand religare. And so these two etymologies are so powerful to understand separately, but also together. And the working definition of religion is the practice or path of reconnecting to the divine. And that's exactly what I just said, because it's the practice is remembering by going through the ritual of repetition, going over again, to reread over and over and over until it sticks, until there's an understanding. Not to just regurgitate, not to just sound smart, not to just show people to virtue signal that you have some knowledge from a book, a holy book. It's to help you understand the information, so that way you have balance, so that way you have real light, so that way you can not be bound to a belief system, which is always inevitably going to hold someone back in consciousness by binding them, to tie them back from forward progress. So I just wanted to share that. Also, you know, think about this too. When I talked about religion, in the sense of binding back, think of Hinduism and Buddhism, because they both share the concept of Dharma. And Dharma is synonymous with religion. Dharma means natural law or cosmic law, universal law. And this means that religion, when you really understand what law means as a binding principle in nature, because we're all bound to consequentialism. And so, therefore, in that context, true religion is not only binding one back to truth and natural law, but the way to reactivate divine connection, which is by reading and retracing, which are really synonymous when you really think about what they both represent. So hopefully that makes sense, and hopefully you see this word religion a little different and, you know, more clear. Now, we're going to go to the next slide, which is left foot first. And this is symbolically where the great work starts, because this is about tracing the sacred footsteps of initiation. So many ancient Egyptian statues of the gods or the Netchers are depicted with the left foot stepping forward, while the rest of the body remains symmetrical and rigid. This quote-unquote step symbolizes initiation into the sacred temple, which is the occult path. This is dealing with the right type of knowledge, okay? And represents movement in the direction of spiritual evolution. So it's a step in the right direction. It's a step into the sacred temple. Symbolically, left foot first suggests moral action guided by the sacred feminine being largely associated with the right hemisphere of the brain. And this is because the brain hemispheres control the opposite, largely control the opposite sides of the body, right? So this means that our right brain largely controls the left side of the body. And this moral action is a right action. So right action in the world is about, you know, symbolically, is about the foot, the left foot, being the action of the right brain, stepping forward as a form of right action or evolution. So this is very, very important to understanding initiation, because in order to be initiated, one has to step forward to initiate the process, to begin the process and go through the process, which is moving forward. Okay? It suggests a forward step. And that first step is also a first principle, because it's about having a sound foundation. It's about stepping from the material into the sacred, into the sacred feminine, into the sacred realm, and going through that sacred realm, and then being initiated by having balance, equilibrium, the balance between light and dark. So, left foot first is the sacred act of will, willpower, to open oneself to truth, to embrace the great work. So that's what this image really represents. It represents being open, because left foot first is the action of an open sacred feminine energy. And this means to be ready to take the very first step by being open to the truth, which means being ready to take on the true great work, to face the dark, to be ready to face the dark and go through the work of the shadow, to go through darkness, to find balance, to be balanced. Because we are so out of balance. Collectively, we are so out of balance, and that is what this science helps us remember about ourselves, is that we must find balance by working on ourselves and overcoming our darkness, overcoming our ignorance, overcoming our base desires. So left foot first means entering into the sacred temple, going from the profane into the sacred, which is the direction of evolution. So this truly is the act of tracing our footsteps. That's why we see that it is a footstep, because footsteps represent a direction that we must remember how to retrace our footsteps back to the original first step. And also think about the footprint. You know, when you're going through the woods and you leave a footprint in the ground, footprint represents mystery. You know, what was there? Who was there? What does this really mean? Where were they going? Where did they start from? So it means to preserve the mystery. That's what the footprint represents, or that's what the left foot first represents. It's also a measurement instrument, because think about the ruler. The ruler is 12 inches, which is a foot. And also 12 is what suggests the 12 greater mysteries. It corresponds to the 12 greater mysteries, which means this is about the solar cult. This is the spiritual science of the solar cult. This is the science of eschatology, about death and rebirth. So it's about tracing the science, following the footsteps of death and rebirth. It's a measurement system. So think about that with the Netzer Thoth, because it measures spiritual transformation in the greater mysteries. It's literally the act of tracing the mental temple of the solar cult. So this is what's going to help us understand where things started to evolve and become more complex, but also where we lost our footing and became materialistic and slid into socialism as a result, where we started to literalize and euhemerize this type of science. Because we have to understand that when we're looking at this image, we're looking at Horus on the left, we're looking at Set on the right, and we're looking at Osiris in the center. And all three of these Netzers, all three of these gods, are anthropomorphized. And this means that they have the characteristics of humans, but with animal features, or they are animals with human-like features. And then when you look at Osiris, he is looking exactly like a human being. So then this is where corruption, people really begin to literalize this ancient sacred information of the mythos. This is where we started to euhemerize the information. And because of this, people started to worship man as God. And, you know, some scholars will argue that that is not Osiris, that that is actually the pharaoh known as Ramses III in the 20th dynasty. But if you don't understand the sacred spiritual science, the eschatology of Osiris, the ritual of Osiris, then of course you're going to look at that and think that that's some actual pharaoh, some actual person. But either way, let's just say that it is Ramses III. Well, it's still the same science of the ritual of Osiris, whether you understand that or not. And I understand that, because what you're dealing with is the waxing angles of the sun, of the rising sun being on the left, which is Horus. And then on the right, you have the waning angles of the sun, which is associated with Set. And then right in between them, right at the crux, is Osiris, who is in equipoise between light and dark, or order and chaos. And it's really, really important to understand the method, the ancient Egyptian science, aka esoteric craft masonry. Because if we don't understand the pillars, if we don't understand the associations, the aspects of consciousness with the brain, then we're not going to understand this science, and then we're going to euhemerize and literalize and completely corrupt the science. But I'm telling you that we have to understand that this science is very advanced, but because it's so advanced and people don't know what they're looking at, they're very confused. And, you know, we have to get back. This is why I'm trying to help us get back to the original inspirationals, or the original inspirations being the stellar, the lunar, and the solar, as far as where all this science really comes from. And for that reason, it's about understanding foundations, because if we don't understand where this science really comes from, then we really don't have a good foundation. We have a shaky foundation. And in this photo, this is all about having a strong foundation to stand on and to walk on and to be initiated into and on. Because all three of these Netchers have their left foot forward. So this is a triune science. It's about being balanced in between, to understand that in order to operate in the world, in order to really truly act rightly in the world, there needs to be balance between the two hemispheres. That's why their hands, Set has his hand on the left side of Osiris, and then Horus has his left hand on the right side of Osiris's brain, on the side of his crown or hejet. And so this is about the power of darkness and light, and being balanced correctly, being in equilibrium in order to take right action in the world by left foot first, to overcome base desires, to initiate right action in the world by overcoming evil actions, by overcoming evil thoughts that can manifest into evil actions. And so what this really represents is a brain that is fully engaged. That's what this represents. Okay, a brain that is illuminated. It is the R complex and the mammalian brain working in unison in order to illuminate the whole neocortex, where both hemispheres are working in unison, working together. So it's about taking that first step forward into evolution. And symbolically, this also means the destruction of the god Apep. And Apep is really where this science began, because Apep is the great serpent of evil. And so in order to overcome evil, there has to be an initiation, a first step away from evil, to destroy evil in the self, and basically leave no trace left behind of this evil serpent, symbolically. But literally, it's about understanding the dominating R complex, the reptile brain. If the reptile brain, being associated with the ego, is the dominator of the whole brain, then this means that one has not been truly initiated. This means that one has not truly evolved. So we have to overcome this great serpent of evil. And therefore, we must trace the sacred. We must initiate ourselves into the sacred and learn how to read the symbols. And so this triadic statue is so, so powerful to study and to see this beautiful science that is, you know, somehow still around. And so, you know, that being said, left foot first, symbolically, is really the whole spiritual process from the beginning forward. That's what it's all about. It's about being conscious of this whole unfolding journey. Now, we are going to go to the next slide, being the sacred trace techniques. And these are the four modalities that I explained in the last few shows. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to break down some very helpful techniques, four different techniques under each one of these modalities that can really not only elevate someone, but it can really give someone a way deeper connection in the Logos and understanding the Logos, a way deeper connection in creation and understanding how to navigate creation a lot better, more consciously. So just remember, you know, when it comes to the sacred trace, evolution traces the virtue, the moral character that we can discover in someone who is authentic. So it's about aligning authentically to whoever or whatever is being emulated. And synchronization traces the movement in things, in others, to adjust to the right frequency in things or to other people. And then ritual traces the movement in time. So this is the spiral repetition, the repetition of the spiral moving up the spire or to the spire to become sharper with intent and with repetition over time, where the waves that we're going through help us get closer and closer to a clarity, to a sharpness, to an understanding. And then mimicking traces the form by becoming the form. Through acting the form out, it traces the symbol by becoming the symbol and acting the symbol out or the sign. So this is what I was talking about with the dance. This is what Albert Churchward was talking about with the dance, the best dancers in the world. And so this is about by acting as if one begins to become. So it's all about application, to apply yourself by acting out the information in order to become aware of the information. So, you know, I'm not going to get too deeply into these techniques. It's more of just, you know, laying out multiple techniques and modalities and ideas just to really solidify the importance of this whole sacred trace, you know, to be eclectic in the way that we understand this type of information, because this is about helping us prepare for the Logos and prepare for Thoth as a means of strengthening the inner investigator, the detective work, for helping us become master tracers or master measurers and master builders. So we're going to start with the first technique of emulation, which is cultivating a caring attitude. So this is first on here for a reason, for a very, very important reason, because without it, nothing else matters. So this is first about understanding that the human condition is mostly in a state of apathy, which means that the majority of the people of this world are in a condition of not caring of what's really taking place in this world or within themselves. And therefore, you could say that this is a type of nihilism. It's a passive nihilism because it's about just saying, who cares what happens to us? Everything is determined and it doesn't matter what I do or what I say. It doesn't matter at all. Who cares? It's just that type of attitude, which is a condition. So they have a non-caring attitude that they are unconsciously cultivating as a result. These types of people, which is most people. And this is about really, truly seeing the condition of apathy, which means having no care for truth and having no care for the suffering that's taken place in this world. And then hopefully what happens is that someone in this condition will come to a critical fork in their personal road, a decision of whether or not they're going to make a change in their life and a change in attitude. So the question could be for someone like this is to ask themselves, am I ready for this decision? Am I conscious enough to shed this condition of apathy and, you know, be aware of this condition and then recondition myself into care? So if someone is trying to emulate a cultivated caring attitude in this world, it is pretty hard to find, especially in this modern world. But what we can do is we can trace or emulate the best parts of many different people in a sort of a concrescence where all the great pieces of good, caring character come together into the self, into a unified, virtuous, warrior-like self, you know, to bring all the best pieces that we can find into something good, something that we can be proud of, because we're paying attention to all the good parts, not just parts that you desire to be like in the sense of not being conscious in the world, because a lot of people desire to find, they are unconsciously finding different parts in people and putting them together in themselves and copycatting or emulating in the sense of doing it for their own selfish gain or selfish reason. But what I'm talking about is taking all the great pieces, the good moral parts of people, and putting them all together. And this is what being eclectic is all about, because there's no perfect human being that we can emulate. But for that reason, this is why we turn to archetypal characters or legends, those who represent the all-encompassing caring person or caring attitude, Like you could say Isis or Hiram Abiff or Osiris or Krishna or Christ or any of these Netcher gods or any other beings alike. So this is something that we can strive for, something we can emulate but not copy, because it's not about copying. It's about taking the greater parts and incorporating them, integrating them into the self in order to become aligned in truth, morally. So this also means emulating compassion and emulating responsibility and stewardship, because it's all about cultivating care. It's all about understanding what is good, understanding the difference between right behavior and wrong behavior. So this is about tracing out the moral qualities, the good qualities from other people who are doing those behaviors in a right way, by learning their methods and putting those methods to use. Because the methods are not owned by anyone. They're not really unique. There really isn't anything new under the sun when you really think about it. But the point is about understanding that these methods are here. They are sciences that we can use to act correct in this world. There really is a correct way to be in this world, to be aligned to. To be aligned means to be in a correct position. To be aligned is to be aligned to natural law. And so an example of someone who is using these methods is, you know, someone who questions authority. Someone who knows that things are not right, and therefore they're not afraid. They have courage to ask and question why things are the way they are. And therefore, it makes you think. Someone like this is inspiring. They make you think. And also, that being said, this person is probably honest. I mean, they are being honest if they're asking questions, because they're trying to understand and they're sharing with others. So someone who is honest, someone who's honest to everybody, someone who's honest to their friends, someone who's honest to their family, someone who is honest to their coworkers, these are inspirations. People who behave this way, they are inspiring. You know, people who treat others with kindness, these people are inspiring. They are cultivating a caring attitude. And this doesn't mean being nice. It doesn't mean being fake. Kindness is about treating others the way one would like to be treated. The golden rule. You know, a person like this is also someone who stays consistent in their character towards everyone. It's not just treating one person better than the other, even though we value people more than other people, in a sense. But the point is, it's about understanding what is true, what is correct, and staying consistent in principle. If someone is being consistent in their principles, who is genuine, who is also willing to change in order to grow, this is very inspiring. So these are obvious qualities to emulate, to emulate a caring attitude, to cultivate a caring attitude. And again, it's not about copying. It's about being inspired and embodying the authenticity of a caring attitude. You know, cultivating care, what it does is it deepens the trace. Because care for truth is a sharpening spiral. Okay, this is something I'm just going to keep on saying over and over and over. It's a sharpening spiral to aspire. That's what it's about. It's about sharpening the self to truth, to continuously sharpen through the waves of the spire, of the spiral, to the point, to the truth. And that being said, it's not like anybody's just magically going to arrive at the truth. It comes in waves, in spiraling waves, okay? Through consistency and persistence, through tenacious effort, through care, through cultivating care. So if we notice someone who really, truly cares in this world, then we will see how dedicated they are to truth. Because they're people who read and research with the intent of discovering truth basically every single day of their life. They have no time to play. They have no time for friends even. And that's something that a lot of people have a very tough time wrapping their brain around, because we live in a world where most people just want friendship through this type of information, and it doesn't really work that way. I mean, you know, if you make friends, then through this information, that's amazing. But it's very difficult to have friends when this is what you care for the most. But again, people will just automatically align if they just go in search for truth and not in search for friendship. Friendship can never really truly be genuine without solid foundations in truth. And so that's why a lot of friendships just don't work out, because they're not solid in their foundations, in their principles. But someone who is dedicated to truth, they grow more and more in honesty with everybody around them. They grow more in honesty within themselves. And that's where it should start, because being honest with yourself allows you to be honest with others. It's really hard to be honest with others if you can't be honest with yourself. And so someone like this who does have honesty with themselves, they question themselves. They question their own beliefs. They're open to being wrong. And that's definitely very inspiring. That's someone who I look up to, who can allow themselves to logically look at the fact that they are wrong and actually say it, have the courage to say that they were wrong or that they are wrong. Most people I know do not know how to do that, unfortunately. And so that being said, someone who is able to say I was wrong is also someone who has a very strong personal logic, where they really have nearly zero dogma or error in their work. And that's really what mastering the self is really all about. They square their square. They true their work. And it is all about perfecting the Ashlar. It's all about perfecting the self. And also, a person like this is very determined to get to the heart of why the human condition is the way that it is. That's what being genuine is all about, is recognizing the condition, the human condition, and then trying to get to the heart of why it is in that condition. So a person like this strives to find the answer to socialism as a result. This is someone who wants to understand slavery. And someone who wants to understand slavery understands ignorance and apathy as a result. Because that's really what slavery is. It's ignorance and apathy. You know, someone like this cares so much that they discover the objective difference between right and wrong on their own. They're driven to understand this and question this information until it becomes robust, until they can demonstrate it with no error. That's someone who truly cultivates care. That's someone who is truly inspiring, because they are showing the universe that they care. They're not doing it to impress anybody else. They're doing it for the reason of wanting to know the truth. And then they care enough to teach it to others. That's really where the great work is, truly, is about trying to reach other people by teaching this type of information. Because it's about casting out. It's about outcasting the information. Once you have the information, now you cast it out for others to take it in. So ultimately, you'll know if someone cares, if they care for the evolution of the species, which means caring for the evolution of the mythos by realizing that this is the story of the evolution of the human being, and putting that absolutely first, because how in the hell can anyone understand why we're in the condition we're in if we don't take that type of information serious? How is that possible? How can we really know who we truly are if we're not willing to look into that type of information and put that type of care into learning this evolution of this ancient Egyptian mythos? So that's when you know someone really cares, is when they really go all the way back, as far back as possible. And I know a lot of this information is very difficult to find. Okay? So this isn't me saying that, you know, if you haven't discovered this information yet, it means that you don't care. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that it's going to take all the care that you have to go all the way back. You have to cultivate care so much in order to really, genuinely understand why we went into socialism and materialism in this world. It's not an answer that can be found within the last 6,000 years. It's an answer that has to be discovered on your own by studying the last million years. At least the last, 300,000 years, you can really start to see it. But you really have to broaden your mind and allow yourself to see the bigger picture, because this information is surfacing for a reason at this time, and it must be taken serious. It must be observed, it must be studied, and it must be cared for. So activating and cultivating a caring attitude is a conscious moral condition by recognizing that the species is truly under a spell of apathy. And then once someone realizes this, they begin to do something about it by giving all that they got to tip the scales back to a more harmonious world of freedom, a balanced world, by balancing the self and then casting that out to others, by sharing that information, by sharing that frequency with others. So then this brings me to the next emulation technique, which is striving for agape. And so cultivating a caring attitude goes hand in hand with striving for agape, because nobody can just strive for agape without truly caring for truth. It just can't happen. So striving for agape as an emulation technique, this is about recognizing the ever-giving divine love of the universe, which is the highest form of love from the Creator. And for that reason, becoming an authentic vessel of that highest form of love. So becoming that love by willing it into the hearts of other people, by being inspiring with the work that you express. So it's about living love. It's about becoming love. It's about evolving from the profane into the sacred, just the same as it's about evolving from ignorance and fear into love by becoming love. So it's about aligning your inner being with the divine principle of love by caring enough to do what is right because it's right. And so striving for agape is about tracing out the divine heart and orienting the self with a type of love that needs no reward or no likes. It doesn't need any pats on the back. It doesn't need any, there shouldn't be any expectations when someone is striving for agape. It's about doing what is right because it's right, without any type of expectation of becoming popular or gaining any type of friendships. And again, you know, if you become popular or gain friendships, that could be actually really good for the work. But that's not why we do this. No one goes in search for truth in order to become popular or gain friends. It's just, it doesn't work that way. It's about understanding the difference between right and wrong and searching for truth and then standing in truth with no expectations. No expectation of any type of reward. And that's why it's a sacrifice. Striving for agape is a sacrifice. It's a willingness to serve truth and nothing else. It's about tracing or acting out expressions for something greater than the self. It's a sacred emulation to trace love all the way to its core and live it and allow it to flow through you into other people's hearts and minds. That's what the spire of inspiration is all about. It's about receiving that spire from those or from the cosmos, from creation itself, and then building on that spire in order to be inspirational to others, in order to pass on the spire. So we're going to go to moral behavior technique. So when it comes to the moral behavior emulation technique, we have to understand this is not about, you know, conforming to some kind of belief system just because others are also partaking in this act or this behavior, okay? And that should be very clear. But it's about doing what's morally right because it's simply right. It's simply correct. So this is definitely not a collectivist behavior. It's about understanding the emulation of objective morality through inductive and deductive reasoning, through the apophatic method. It's not just about following rules either. It's about tracing out the sacred in order to understand the rules or the spiritual laws or the connection of the universe and all the causes and all the effects. It's about embodying moral behavior authentically by our thoughts and our emotions and our actions. It's about tracing natural law by participating in natural law through right action, which is about being conscious, which is about initiation. It's about left foot first. So emulating moral behavior is absolutely about tracing the virtue, tracing the moral behavior that we see in others in order to apply those characteristics or behaviors into the self, into yourself, into thyself. And again, this doesn't mean to copy someone who is acting this way. It's to emulate, it's to take what we see as good and apply it into ourselves. And the way that we express is a unique way of expressing good or wrongdoing. But it's about modeling the self after those who are ethical, those who are spiritual exemplars. So this is why so many people try to emulate different saints or sages or raised elders or, you know, different wise men and women or archetypal figures or basically anybody who embodies the virtues that are connected to the sacred trace or to the sacred. So it's because, you know, these actual people, these archetypal figures, to a high degree, they are the examples. The people are the living examples, and the mythical archetypes are the universal examples. They are the examples in nature that we can look to for truth. So being conscious in the way that we imitate the exemplar, this is how we can align their actions and their character with ourselves, with a deeper moral pattern that is, it's encoded with the sacred trace. Something we can trace out of them into ourselves, because we're drawing, as we trace them, as we trace the moral action, the moral behavior, the virtuous character in them, we are drawing that into ourselves. That's how We become emulators. That's how we emulate. So again, it's not about copying. It's about understanding that spire, something that is primordial, something that is built into the fabric of the universe, which is law. And so this is what the mystery schools are all about. This is what the mystery schools really help us understand, because the moral principle or natural law is what underlines all of these sacred maps, all of these mystery schools that are inspired by the cosmos. And so, emulating moral behavior is not just about being a follower. It's not just about some arbitrary rules. It's a technique of transformation that cultivates virtue and wisdom and care and integrity, which are all qualities that are essential to resonating with the sacred, to synchronize with the sacred. And that's something that I haven't really mentioned enough. All of these modalities and these techniques, they all are interwoven with each other. They all work together. And that's just something to really keep in mind as we're going through this information. So now we're going to move on to reflective journaling as a technique. So this is about writing down ideas and writing down concepts as a practice of inward dialogue and self-examination, something that can be seen and then be contemplated, but inspired by other great teachers and also experiences, because experiences are also our teacher. And by journaling reflectively, this is about modeling the contemplative or spiritual practice of different, you know, wise people like sages or mystics or anyone who engages deeply with the sacred or the sacred trace. So it's about tracing by taking the great works of other master builders and organizing their work on paper in order to make sense of what they have laid out, to contemplate on what they've laid out, to go further on what they've laid out by going further into the research outside of their work. So this is about standing on the shoulders of giants and building from the great work that they've laid forward. So reflective journaling is about emulating the learning process of preserving something that we as a human species have been doing for hundreds of thousands of years, which really, truly is the technique of rememberment. That's what it's about. Because we write notes as a preserver in order to come back to, in order to remember, because it's about memory. So reflective journaling is a very, very powerful refinement process of learning. It truly expedites growth internally because it's something that we can always come back to. It's something that we can always reflect on. Now, we're going to go to the techniques of the modality of synchronizing, which is about tracing the movement in things. So we're going to start with the first technique, which is word spelling or word casting. So this is about becoming conscious of the words that we use and the intent behind those words. It's about speaking with clarity and with focus in order to synchronize, okay, to be conscious. And it's also about being aware of the vulgarity and the profanity that we use and being wise in how we choose the words that we use. So synchronizing in this case is word casting with the sacred. It's the act of tracing the sacred through the choice that we make of what words we use that invoke the sacred or align with the sacred. It's a type of frequency tuning with the sacred, aligning the self with the sacred. And so that being said, when it comes to the sacred, word casting is about casting outward, casting out a message, a meaningful message. And it's about being aware that the message can and should be clear and strong and crisp, because this way the message has a higher potential to be heard and received by those who are ready to receive. But the opposite of that is about casting messages out in a way that is muddied, it's muffled, it's filled with vulgarity, it's filled with profanity, where the message is so saturated in these low frequency fillers that the message just gets lost. And then it becomes a waste of energy. It becomes a waste of time. It becomes a waste of everyone's time, including the person who is delivering this vulgar, profane, this muddied, muffled message. So for that reason, we have to ask ourselves if the message that we want to really get out and be received in its maximum delivery, we have to ask ourselves, is it worth spelling it out, casting it out in a profane distortion and discord? This is really important because it is all about synchronizing the information into others, into their minds, into their hearts. We have to be able to put the frequency out as clear as possible without all this distortion, because that's what it is. So word casting is about being in harmony with consciousness, which is directly linked to an observed and felt connection with all things. So you could look at it as it's a path of becoming an animistic wordsmith, because it's about understanding that the words are sacred. They're carrying an animating spirit. These sacred words are carrying an animated spirit, especially on the mental plane and obviously on the spiritual plane. And also, word casting is also about listening to the phonetics, the sounds of the words, and listening for the green language, which is a type of conscious synchronizing. So when someone is speaking truth and listening very deeply, being conscious of the phonetic sounds, the phonetic frequency of the words, and how they synchronize how they sound alike. This is a major occult tracing technique that really does take an open mind and also a great symbolic ear to listen symbolically. So this takes a lot of practice to become symbol literate in green language, in the green frequency. And this technique of word casting or word spelling, green language, this is a great way to deepen the meaning of certain words in people's minds, because people's subconscious is hearing the words, like television being tell live vision or tell a vision. It's saying that into the subconscious mind, you know, or when talking about Osiris, using this word Osiris while showing and explaining the zodiac, the wheel, the circle of the zodiac, because the zodiac is circular like the eye, and it has a crux or a midpoint in the center, like a pupil, which is where the sun is supported. It's supported at the crux. And so this whole zodiac symbol is akin or likened to the circle dot, because it is a circle, and then right at the crux is the dot, which is where we put the sun, because all the houses of the zodiac support the light at the center, the sun. So this represents Ra. The circle dot, especially in the solar cult, this represents the eye of Ra, or just Ra or Ray. And the green language going into the subconscious while using this word Osiris is Osiris. So it's O, like the circle, apostrophe S, and then the word iris, I-R-I-S, Osiris. So Osiris, Osiris. So the O being the circle of the zodiac, the wheel, and everything inside of the wheel is being the iris. And you can even look at all the houses as the folds of the iris. Because the iris, the actual iris of an eye, controls how much light enters into the eye. Just like the zodiac reveals more light when the right knowledge, when enough knowledge is brought to the information of the zodiac. So it's very powerful to understand word casting and word spelling. Now we're going to go to symbolic resonance. So synchronizing traces the symbolic resonance, because symbols are markers. They're heritage preservers. They're focal points. They're a comparative study. And this is where we find resonance, through the study, which is what I just explained with the green language, because it's about putting the circle dot next to the zodiac and studying them separately to find out what is similar and what is different. That's where you find the language of symbolism, to compare one thing with another. And so when we focus on a symbol and bring the right associated knowledge to that symbol, this is when we can synchronize our inner state of mind with the archetypal meaning and the energy that symbol carries. So it's like the, think about the luminous all-seeing eye within the triangle. The tracing, or, you know, bringing enough and bringing the right knowledge to that symbol. The example of this would be bringing the knowledge of the Trivium and the Trinity, and really, you know, any sacred knowledge of the three. All this can continually open up and synchronize the inner self with the primordial meaning of the symbol. And so the more knowledge brought to that symbol, the more luminous one's eye becomes. And therefore, this even fulfills the obvious expression of the symbol itself. And so what this means is the eye is on, but becoming brighter and brighter and more luminous. So it's about synchronizing with that symbol. As you become luminous, you start to synchronize with that symbol. That's what it's about. It's a sharpening tool. It's a spiritual sharpening tool to, as you sharpen yourself, that eye becomes brighter, just like the symbol. And also, just drawing a symbol. Draw the luminous eye with the triangle or any symbol. Because just by drawing the symbol, this helps us resonate and synchronize with the symbol. The act of drawing actually actualizes internally into us, because drawing the symbol is a form of reflective journaling. So when we draw symbols, it causes a primordial memory within us to occur. And this is really what helps us become symbol literate. So this takes us down to writing notes and drawing. Writing syncs up the mind like reflective journaling, but when it comes to the sacred trace, it's about writing out myths and stories and different sciences that align with truth. So it synchronizes to the sacred through this technique. It's about initiating the self into the rhythm of the unfoldment of the spire, of the spiral. So writing allows the imagination to organize the sciences that we write out in a way that paints a bigger picture that we can internally see, which can be related to or synchronized with other people, other researchers who are also consciously connected to the sacred. So when we write, it's about syncing with the word. So this is about the logos. Writing is just so important when it comes to reflecting and synchronizing. Because as you write out the letters of the word, you're writing out the symbols. You're writing out bundles of symbols that invoke definition in the mind, which means clarity. Because definition is about clarity. The higher the definition, the better the clarity, just like a TV. The lower the definition of a TV, it's just not going to be as clear. And so then there is note-taking. And so note-taking is a technique of the synchronized recorder, which is a way to match your mental attention and your presence to the flow of sacred knowledge that can be contemplated right on the spot or later. So notes help organize and harmonize fragmented thoughts by bringing them together into a coherent pattern aligned with the source, in order to really have clarity, to really have a higher definition. So note-taking is crucial to spiritual development, and anybody who is truly spiritual understands this. You know, anybody who considers themselves to be truly spiritual and they're not taking notes, this type of person has absolutely deceived themselves. They've basically robbed themselves of any true growth. And I see this all the time, especially in the New Age community, where people are always talking about how spiritual they are, but they have never, ever done any real research at all. So they have really, really stunted their growth by not taking notes or doing real spiritual research. And, you know, I also understand that when it comes to how to take notes, there is a specific preference to how we do this. And taking notes on a notepad, I find to be very important, because this is just one way to take notes, but it's about being physically the one who writes the symbol. So this is about definition. It's about clarity. It's about connection. Okay? So I definitely recommend to take notes the old-fashioned way, which is on paper with a pen or a pencil. But I also personally use my phone for taking notes, which I find to be very, very important, because I have a lot of organization. I can find information so quickly. I have a whole library on my phone, a very big, big library of notes and information. And therefore, I am always using my phone. And this is a very proper way to use this type of technology, which not enough people do. But, you know, some people who do take notes, they use different apps for note-taking, and that's good. I mean, there's a lot of different apps that are better than others. I just use the simple notes, but I know that there are apps out there that are better for organization and definitely have more cool functions that do help organize the information a lot better. But it's about getting in a rhythm of note-taking, because this is what increases memory, and therefore it's a great method for tracing out truth. Because as you take notes, you are gaining clarity, because you're becoming conscious. It's helping you become conscious. It's helping you recognize the importance of knowledge itself. Because as you take notes, you are not only just taking notes, you're learning words. And when you're learning words, you're becoming a wordsmith. And when you're becoming a wordsmith, you're becoming understanding of the sentences that you're hearing and you're speaking. You're having more of an impact with being clear, and therefore having a better way of communication as a result. So note-taking is extremely, extremely important. And That being said, we're going to go to drawing as a very powerful synchronization, because drawing synchronizes your inner vision with your outer forms of reality. So drawing is something that can come from the left brain hemisphere, or it is something that can come from the right brain hemisphere, as far as what these hemispheres are associated with. But really, the goal is understanding that it can come from both, and it should. But it's important to understand that, you know, left brainers typically draw very technical. They draw very exact. They are really not creative types of people. They can be really good at their technical skills, but they really just can't draw anything other than that. But right brainers draw very outside of the techniques, very outside of what is technical. They go beyond the technical rules of drawing. And this is really what causes a very unique expression to occur in people. But drawing from a balance of both brain hemispheres when they're in unison with each other, this is what creates a creative platform for being technical, but in a creative way. So it draws respect from both aspects of the brain, because now they're working together. They respect each other. And, you know, this is what craft masonry is all about, because it's where the technical and the creative come together. So this is the intelligent expression of art. But all art is amazing. You know, it's so cool when you look at the range that we can have, being, you know, really right-brained or really left-brained. But when they come together, it's so magical, because it's about looking at something very creative, but with something you can read with the left brain. And that's what masonry is about. True esoteric masonry, craft masonry, that's what it's about. So drawing from a place of unity, it draws out clarity. It draws out the clarity of the divine blueprint, which is also a form of mimicking, because it's about synchronizing with the divine artist of the universe, the grand architect. And mimicking the creation is a form of learning creation and memorizing creation, the aspects of creation. So as one draws, one mimics the designer, the creator, the ultimate divine drawer of the universe. But it's also about, and I think it's even more important to understand, this is a way that we synchronize with the designer, because it's about learning the designer. It's about learning the creator, the grand architect of the universe. So, because I have so much more to talk about, I'm going to go ahead and end the show there. We still have ritual and mimicking, and it's really powerful information. So I really hope that this is resonating with you. I hope it's synchronizing with you, and I really hope that you will make it into the next show, where I'm going to just go right into ritual and mimicking and probably introduce some more information that I've been wanting to talk about that I kind of thought that maybe I would just leave on the back burner and maybe talk about another time. So I think I'm just going to make another show out of ritual and mimicking and, really just clarify these techniques because they are very powerful. They're very helpful. And they are all about the sacred trace. And it's all about taking action and being initiated with that symbolic left foot first. And so it's all about tracing our footsteps back all the way to the spire, to the initiation. And so that being said, I really, really appreciate all of you for tuning in. And if you're interested in more shows or presentations or news, please go to cubbyhole.com. And also, if you're still listening, we are really negatively being affected by censorship. And that being said, I really highly recommend downloading these episodes and sharing them if you can or when you can. And if you really find value in this work, then I really highly recommend that you do this because it's so important to preserve this knowledge. Even if you don't fully agree with everything that you're hearing, if it really mostly resonates with you, it is worth saving. So that being said, I am your host, Nate Kapp, and thank you for listening. And keep in mind to do no harm, defend truth, and keep transcending dogma.